Montreal, theoldorchard.com.
Good afternoon, Pierre. How are you?
I'm good, but every game counts. I don't care if they're 29th in the league or first in the league. You got to get the points. They did it.
Oh, yeah. I'm not downplaying what they did. I'm just pointing out the challenge that they have tonight. I think some players, as well as they looked, they're going to have to up their game a little tonight.
Yes, sir, they will. But you have to remember, too, Buffalo's coming off a big win at home against the Edmonton Oilers on Friday night. What's the best way to say it? The ambush was on for Montreal, and they took advantage of it. Good for them, but good for Carey. The crowd was clearly invigorated. I'm not sure there's a better three-star announcement than when Michel Lacroix does it. Claude Mouton was phenomenal, but Michel's taken it to another level. He really has. Good for him. It was great for the fans, but they have to build off that, Mitch, and you know what? Tonight's going to be tough.
We'll get to that in a second. But, you know, so many of the names that have been mentioned as why the Canadiens find themselves in the position they're in, well past 25% of the season, moving towards the one-third part, is those names emerged. Drouin, Galchenyuk, Price, Petrie. This is, you know, you've been waiting. Pacioretty is next. He's got to get going here. But you're looking for signs to build momentum. They certainly had the right signs on Saturday, and now we'll see what follows.
And I know you probably have spoken about it all night long or all afternoon long. Is Paul Byron the most consistent player the Canes have right now?
Well, considering he kills penalties as well as he does. Well, Byron and Brendan Gallagher are the two guys, and they're similar in many respects. They've been the two best players on this team, yeah.
Yeah, and I'd be willing to say that Brendan the first 7 to 10 games wasn't great. He really wasn't. I told you at the time, and he'd probably be the first person to tell you that. I think Paul Byron's been the best Montreal Canadian player. That's really good. I'm really happy for him. He's a worker. He's a guy that cares. He's so proud to wear that sweater. You need a team full of those guys. That's how, when you get a team full of guys like that, that allows you to win games like tonight.
Shea Weber, 4 games. There's been nothing. Yeah. It's been a complete blackout on information other than lower body. Gallows, is there anything you can add to this?
No, not really. I mean, we saw him take a couple therapy days, and then therapy days became missed games, and now missed games has reached 4. That's all we know.
Well, go back to when we talked about, you know, different situations. I've always been a fan of transparency. I think organizations have a responsibility to protect players. I think Mitch brought it up last week about Ken Hitchcock, talking about we can't keep doing this. And I'm on Hitchcock's team. But you do have a responsibility as a team to protect the player. But I also think, and this is really important, the league has, if they're going to do this and tell people about injuries, referees need to pay attention to that. And if you see specific targeting, whether it's a slash or a hit from behind on a guy that's got a bad back or whatever, the league needs to be aware of that too and make sure the referees know.
That's an interesting point. I know what you're saying, and fans will probably respond by saying, well, wait a minute, shouldn't they be calling the game regardless of whether a guy has an injury or not, a certain way?
Yeah, that's more than fair. But I'm telling you, everybody wants injury disclosure. And in our sport, unlike the other sports, we have one thing that, and forget Irish hurling, because Irish hurling has it too, and lacrosse. So there's 3. You have a weapon in your hand, and the weapon can do a lot of damage. So if you, and this is going back a few days, the dark ages, but when we were in playoff series and we knew guys had injuries, and we knew what they were if we ever found out, targeting was very, very apparent.
I don't remember which particular series it was. It was fairly recent. It might have been the Rangers and the Canadiens. And Michel Therrien was asked about a player on another team. So I'm guessing it was the Rangers. I apologize for not thinking clearly here. I just can't remember. But he said with a bit of a cockeyed grin, he said, we know what's wrong. Oh, it was Tampa. One of the players on Tampa was hurt. And he said, we know he's hurt, and we know what's wrong with him. He said that flat out.
Yeah, that's good scouting.
Might have been Kucherov.
That's part of scouting. It is. I know people are probably saying, you really go that deep? Yeah, you go deeper than you think. So that's the only thing I would say on the injury disclosure. The Shea Weber thing, I can't tell you. I don't know. I think you know what my policy is now. I put this in place probably 7 to 10 years ago. So many people lied to me to create disinformation around the league that I stopped asking about injuries.
Okay.
And so I don't report on them because I've had coaches utilize me as a tool to get information out there, and it was not accurate.
All right. Do we know about Schlemko?
David Schlemko is not playing tonight. He will play at some point this week, but he is not in the lineup. No lineup changes from Saturday's game against Buffalo.
All right, a couple of things. That would be a tough one to drop him into tonight against Columbus, right?
No, not fair. You can't do that. You cannot do that tonight.
So this is, again, you're relying on Jeff Petrie, who's been terrific in the absence of Weber. He's played 29 minutes, played 27 minutes, played 24 minutes the other night. He was all over the ice.
Yep.
What is the biggest challenge?
That was his best game. That was his best game, by the way.
He cut off Jack Eichel at the blue line on one play. Yep. He looked, my goodness, he looked like an all-star defenseman the way he...
That was the best game he played all year. Now, I just got off the phone with some people from the Buffalo Sabres not long before I came on with you. They thought that was Petrie's best game as well, just so you're aware. Mm-hmm. So you're speaking the facts. You really are.
The biggest challenge tonight against a group of forwards on Columbus who are so big and skate so well and have talent.
Everybody focuses in on their forwards, and they don't focus in on their defense enough. You'll see Zach Werenski's got probably the best release of any defenseman in the league. Seth Jones is as mobile and as smart as any defenseman in the league with the puck. They have big bodies back there. They're really hard to get to the net on. If you do not elevate the puck, and I got to think Bobrovsky's playing tonight. It's not Korpisalo, right? Bobrovsky's playing?
Bobrovsky and Price.
Okay. If you do not elevate the puck on Bobrovsky, you're not going to score. And all you need to do is look at tape from this past weekend with Ottawa and Columbus and watch how Ottawa scored their goals. If you do not elevate the puck, you can't score on him. It's unbelievable how flexible and how strong he is down low. I would say Pekka Rinne, Carey Price, and Sergei Bobrovsky are the three best goalies down low in the league. They're phenomenal.
Yeah, well, we saw him here just, what was it, a week ago? Or 10 days ago when they were here? The Canadiens got a point. They lost in overtime, and they scored a late goal to at least get a point.
Yep, battled hard, earned it.
That's when I warned you about Werenski's shot. And you'll see. If you go to the game, just watch how quick the puck gets off that kid's stick. It's unbelievable. He shoots as well as any forward in the league in terms of shooting mechanism. It's unbelievable.
I would assume there's a general acknowledgement when it comes to the Canadiens, Pierre, that it's good that they won Saturday night, Carey's back, but the enormity and the gravity of the situation that they've dug in themselves into is pretty grave. I mean, they had a 7-10 stretch where they went 7-3 over 10 games. That wasn't even enough to put them into a playoff spot. And what did they do just after that? They had 1 point in 5 games. So, Saturday night, that's all well and good. It's just as well that they are right back at it tonight. They can't feel happy about themselves, fat and complacent, because it's still a long way to go, and they've got to follow it up every night.
Every single night is like a game 7. Absolutely, Rod. No, you're not embellishing anything. This is the position they put themselves in, and they should be grateful to the Edmonton Oilers for going into Boston and winning on Sunday, because I can tell you, Boston's been playing really good hockey. Really good hockey. And they had 2 turnovers. Torrey Krug turned the puck over. David Pastrnak turned the puck over. Both those turnovers led to goals that allowed Edmonton to win. If they don't have those 2 turnovers, Edmonton doesn't win, and Boston's a problem for Montreal. So, no, you're absolutely right. Here's the way I'm looking at Montreal now. They basically have to win. Probably if you go in 10-game segments, they got to win 7 out of 10 or 6 out of 10 and get at least a point in another game. That's the position they put themselves in.
Yeah, no doubt about it. We talked about it earlier when they went off to that 1-6 start. They've got to go 7-3 in this next stretch, and they did. But they have to keep. That's the problem. They have to keep doing that. That is tough to do over 70 games.
Yeah, but you know what happens as the season goes along, and this is a thing that never gets brought up. But you're living it now. Guys get hurt. The deeper you go into the season, and you're a team chasing, your better players play more, they get injured more often because they're getting maxed out. They're getting broken down. That's the part of this whole equation that people don't talk about enough.
And we know the bump they got after winning 7 games in 10 is that then they went 5 with a single point. So that's what we have to get across. And you know the players are acknowledging this. Is it's a major hole they find themselves in.
No question. No question. But the good news is they're keeping it within single digits. Once it gets to double digits and you get to the All-Star break, you're done. The only team that's done it is Andrew Hammond in Ottawa since 1995. You're done. That's the way it is because of division and conference games after the All-Star break.
Yeah, which is why, and you guys know I've been fairly positive when I look at the division specifically that the Canadiens play in. But this week, like we're looking at 10-game segments. This week, the next 4 games could decide the fate for the Canadiens because, well, I don't want to look past Columbus tonight, but certainly the coaches are a little bit because those divisional matchups are so much more key. And they have Ottawa, and then they have Detroit, and then they have Detroit again. And later in December, Pierre mentioned how the December month, because of all the distractions of the holidays and everything, could just fly by you. And then December's not easy. They play a lot of games and they travel at the end of the month.
They
like,
also
this
play,
stretch is key.
They also play. Remember they played Ottawa 3 times in a week late last season? They're doing the same thing with Boston coming up in a couple of weeks in December. 3 games in a week against the Bruins.
Yep. That'll be a huge part of it. But I think you would all acknowledge that Toronto is as advertised, right? Tampa Bay is as advertised. Montreal hasn't been as good as maybe their fans would want. And I would say that the Florida Panthers have not been as good as what their fans were expecting. And I think Boston, having been able to overcome some of the injuries, not all of them, but some of them, they're starting to get some footing. They're starting to figure it out how they have to play. So that segment that Mitch just talked about is going to be gigantic against Boston.
So, Pierre, answer me this on the Columbus Blue Jackets, legitimate Stanley Cup contender.
Yes.
How could their power play with a guy like Werenski back there be under 10%?
Which is mind-boggling because let me take you back to the Buffalo Sabres in 1993 and 94, and I only know it because I coached against Tortorella and John Muckler, and Tortorella was the ace power play assistant coach of the time in the NHL. Trust me, I coached against him. They had Dougie Bodger, Dale Howardchuk, Pat LaFontaine, Alexander McGillney, Yuri Himalev. That was the power play. That was their top-end power play. They crushed people with that power play. Every team in the league got crushed by that power play. Tortorella is a power play guy. Brad Shaw, who's his assistant, he's a power play guy. This is mind-boggling that power play is not better. With Werenski back there, Seth Jones, Cam Atkinson, it's mind-boggling.
Panarin, Panarin added to the mix this year.
They were expecting a lot from him. Absolutely.
All right, maybe they get it going. There's still plenty of time left, but it is kind of crazy. We'll revisit the matchup tonight. News in the NHL today. I didn't see this.
I saw it. I know you're talking about Landeskog.
Yeah.
No, I didn't see it until this morning. I do Ottawa radio. They asked me about it, and I had not seen it. I saw it this morning after the show. That is definitely a multiple game suspension. Definitely.
Well, yeah, it was vicious. It was unnecessary. It was behind the net in the offensive zone. So it was 100% legitimate. And I mean, for anyone, inexcusable for anyone, but that was not a hockey play in any way.
If you watch, the first cross check is okay. The first one where he pushes Tkachuk into the net is okay. The second one is savage. He goes right for the head.
Is he that kind of player?
No, but he's been suspended a lot, so you got to wonder what makes him go blinky, because he's gone blinky more than once. And I can tell you this, if I brought him into your studio and you didn't know that he was a professional hockey player, you would say he was either an actor, because he's a real handsome guy and he's a very polite person, I'm telling you, or you would say he's a college professor. I am not kidding you. That's the kind of person. This is a very well-educated, very prompt and proper person. He really is. So something makes him lose it. I don't know what it is, but something does.
All right, it's a 4-game suspension for Landeskog.
I just I think probably Landis, like Matthew Tkachuk, more than one player would like to do what Landeskog did to Matthew Tkachuk.
Of course. But ask Knuckles. He'll tell you. There were a lot of people that wanted to do that to him, too. That's part of your job.
Every time I ask Ray Ferraro about playing against Knuckles, it's like he just wanted to skate as far away from possible when he got that look in his eyes. You just knew it. The loony look.
I remember in the old Boston Garden, because that's when Chris was near the end and I was coaching, and I remember what, you'd have to ask Chris about it, but I remember being at practice in the morning, and I think he was ready to fight his coach, Mike Milbury, at the time. I really do. Because they had words. Like, it wasn't a little conversation. They had words at the practice. We ended up winning the series, but he was mad at Mike for something. I don't know what it was. But I was watching. I'm like, oh, I'm not letting Mario anywhere near him. Let's tell Scotty and Bob. Keep him away.
Pierre, you referenced the Ken Hitchcock quote last week about disclosure on injuries. There was another quote from another veteran Stanley Cup winning coach, John Tortorella, basically saying when coaches talk about the line combinations and dropping a guy off and putting another guy up or whatever it is, it's all total BS.
About what? About targeting?
No, just the combinations that they don't really know, you know, what they're talking about. You just put guys together and you hope there's chemistry.
Oh yeah, no, you definitely hope there's chemistry. There's no question. But you evaluate, and then eventually you realize those guys don't get along. Well, not get along, but it doesn't work for them on the ice. Or these guys just have magic. I would tell you this. Couturier, and this is a team that's a non-playoff team right now, but Couturier, Voracek, and Giroux, that line has chemistry.
Instantly, they're right?
Really good. You know, you look at Nemestikov, Stamkos, and Kucherov, that line has really good chemistry. Really good. I'm going to take you back, and this is, I don't know if John would appreciate me bringing this up, but I saw Marty McGinnis, who was a really good New York Islander. Really, really good New York Islander player. And I said, I thought you played one of the best third lines in that era in the league. And he said, really? You remember that? I said, I remember you and Brad Delgarno being part of a group. And he says, yeah, you forgot the center. I said, I think it was Travis Green, but I'm not sure. He goes, it was Travis Green. So they were amazing together. That was a third line for the Islanders in those days. But Delgarno was good on the boards. McGinnis could really skate and force turnovers. Travis Green was really good through the neutral zone. So you had three guys who were playing as depth players for Al Arbor. They were really good. They had instantaneous chemistry. They were excellent. So I think you can find it. It just takes time.
Yeah, and of course the big focus here ahead of the Buffalo game was Claude Julien trying, and it obviously didn't work. Absolutely zero chemistry with Pacioretty, Drouin, and Galchenyuk. Pacioretty back with Deneau and Andrew Shaw, and a lot of us are thinking there's something wrong with Pacioretty lower body, Pierre, because he's simply not skating, which is his strength. There's no push on the ice from Pacioretty.
I don't see him having the same explosive ability to get open for that shot coming down the wing that he was so known for. But I don't know if it's that. I don't know if it's between the ears. I don't know. You know, Sam Flood, the great executive producer of the NHL and NBC, tells us all the time, don't speculate on injuries. You're not a doctor. He's right. So I'm not even going to try.
All right. One of the great stories before we finish up here over the weekend was David Booth scored his first two goals of the season for the Detroit Red Wings. I'm sure there are some people who didn't even realize David Booth is back in the NHL. His first goals in 2 years, he's been in the KHL.
He opened the season on the Detroit roster. I did their opening game in Detroit. You know, he's a Michigan kid who went to Michigan State. Obviously, that was a great moment for him last night. He had a little bit of divine intervention on some of those chips, but that's all good. That's good stuff. I like David a lot. You know, I know that some of the people don't like all this hunting stuff that he does and everything else. I like David. I think he's a really good guy, really, really good guy. And he's one of the first players, I can tell you, Mitch, he was a player to get faster. He actually trained running downhills to get his leg. That's how he trained to get ready for NHL seasons. And back when he was in his prime, he was one of the most powerful skaters in the league.
Let's finish up here. Claude Julien speaking to members of the media just before we started chatting with Pierre.
I answered that question before, and the way I answered it was, if a guy's ready to play, he's going to play. So we don't hold guys back for no reason whatsoever, except that when they're ready to play, we bring them back. So I would say no.
All right. So that's why I guess the question's about Shea Weber, but again, they're not really telling us other than the fact that he's not ready to play. So
yeah, no, that's, I mean, I understand. So I don't know what the premise of the question was. If you think they're going to hold Shea Weber out? He's a hurt player.
The question was, does the play of some of the defensemen as of late, like Morrow, Petrie, and Alsner, does their play as of late make it easier to keep Shea Weber out of the lineup? That was the question that was asked.
Yeah, sure. We'll keep one of our highest paid players on the bench. Yeah, that'd be good.
All right.
Now,